I buy into this book, you know, it kind of understands, it's really wrestling with everything that humans wrestle with. And so I think that's one reason why the book really stayed with me as I grew up. It was like a book that really met me where I was at and just kind of where I always am.
Welcome to This Book, That Book. I'm your host, Catherine Kwong. This is the first episode of our second season. For those who've been listening and are here for more, thank you. To the new listeners, welcome. This is a show where I speak with one guest about a childhood book that was meaningful to them and the ways that they read and reflect on that story now that they're grown up. One of the biggest joys of producing this show is getting to read new books that weren't a part of my childhood. Books like The House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros and The Babysitter's Club by Anne M. Martin. In today's episode, my guest, Autumn Krauss, and I get to revisit a favorite classic, Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Our conversation will cover the whole story end to end, so we'll have all the details that you need to follow along. So if you're in the middle of the book or avoiding spoilers, come back to this conversation when you're ready. We discuss writerly influences, the importance of supportive siblings, and two things you might not guess about us, someone who writes and someone who produces a podcast. And with that, Autumn, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. So my name is Autumn Krauss. I'm a writer in Orange County, California. I write in a variety of ways. So I do professional copywriting. I write for interior design magazines, but I'm also a young adult novelist, which is my most favorite way to express my writing. And I also have, you know, co-written things. But again, YA writing is really where my love is at, for sure.
Fantastic. Can you tell us the title and author of the book that you've chosen today?
I've chosen Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte.
And for people who haven't read the book in a while, or maybe people who've never read it, could you provide just a brief summary in your own words of what the story is about?
Definitely. So the main character is Jane Eyre. The story begins when she's young. It covers quite a bit of her life. However, when the story starts, she's living with an aunt who is really mean and abusive. She goes to a charity school where they're really mean and abusive. And then she eventually grows up, goes to become a governess at an estate, where she falls in love with, a man named Edward Rochester. And they grow close, they get engaged. However, he has a secret in his attic, which, derails their engagement. She flees, and finds refuge with a guy named St. John. She goes on to get an inheritance and eventually, at the very end, returns to Rochester.
Splendid. A perfectly comprehensive summary. Great. I loved the twice mention of mean and abusive there.
That should have been a third. I should have been like, and then she got into a relationship with Rochester and he was mean and abusive.
Indeed. So diving into, you know, thinking about the book and then you as a reader, tell me about your origin story with this book. Like, how did you and Jane Eyre, the book, first meet?
Sure. So when I was a teen, my older sister, you actually know her. I believe she was your teacher at one point, Leilani, high school teacher, right?
Yes.
Perfect. Well, so she actually read me. She's my older sister. And she actually read me Jane Eyre aloud.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she was like my real life Audible, but in real life. So I guess in a way I almost heard it like an audiobook because literally the first time I heard it, she read it to me as a teen. And I was so taken in by the pathos and the emotions of the book. I was an aspiring writer, and I remember thinking, I really want to write something that is this viscerally gripping, because I was like drowning in it in the best way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. And in terms of like hearing it read aloud, was that when you were a teen or when your older sister was a teen and then you were slightly younger?
So I was probably about maybe 13. And then she was, you know, older or mid-teens. So early teens for me definitely is when I first heard it. Had never heard of the author before. Didn't know anything about the book. So completely went into it as a blank slate, which was a wonderful way to experience it for sure.
Oh, I'll bet. And the experience of having the book read aloud to you, was that a common occurrence within your household?
Yeah, you know, so I grew up in a homeschooling family. We weren't allowed to, you know, watch most movies or shows. We didn't have a TV. So books really took the place of that. But what is interesting is, so obviously, you know, when we were young, my mom read to us a lot. And that's how I fell in love with stories. But what's kind of weird is, like, I never really liked to read. I loved stories that I found in books, but reading never came naturally to me. Weirdly enough, it still doesn't come naturally to me. It's something I kind of have to make myself do. And as a writer, I definitely ensure that I'm always reading something. So having my sister read the book to me was really the most ideal scenario, because to be honest, I probably would not have read it to myself. And if she hadn't.
Yeah, I could see that. And I could also see just like encountering a book as audio for the first time is just like a really, in some sense, totally different sensory experience. And
Yeah, it really, like, you kind of get to just like sit back. Somebody else does all the work. You just get to kind of enjoy it. It's kind of ideal, really.
Totally. And you just kind of listen. Exactly. I love that. And yeah, I can see that. I mean, Jane Eyre, it's not a short book. I mean, it's probably one of, probably was one of the longer books that I ever read when I first read it. I also grew up in a homeschooling family where we had few TV movies, but tons and tons of books. So happy to hear that that was.
Yes, they're the best.
I guess. Yeah. Had a fixture in your childhood.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I feel like, you know, when you say like homeschool family or, you know, like we weren't allowed mainstream entertainment, I feel like a lot of times, you know, maybe that sounds severe, but I feel like at least for our family is it didn't really feel like a deprivation because, you know, my mom always made sure we had books and stories. Our minds are always engaged. So it actually made for a very rich childhood, for at least for me, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I think I resonate a lot with that. I think there's a certain kind of expansiveness that having those outlets for entertainment or imagination, just what those outlets can offer. So was the read aloud that Leilani, your sister, did with you, was it just the two of you? Did anyone else in your family join these types of read alouds, or did you end up sharing this story with anybody after that, like, first initial read aloud?
No, so she literally just read it to me in our bedroom pretty much at night. And yeah, I just remember, you know, like our bedroom is kind of like our little sacred escape. And it was just like its own little world away from the world. I don't believe anybody else ever joined in. It was literally just the two of us, just like sitting on our beds. We had beds across from each other.
Oh, that's awesome. That also just sounds incredibly sweet. And yeah, again, just a great way to share a wonderful, wonderful story.
Yeah, it really was. You know, now I'm like kind of intrigued. I almost like, I've never thought of this before, but I'm like wondering if she had read the story before, or if she knew what it was about or who the author was. Because again, I really was just completely uninformed about it in its entirety. So I'm like kind of wondering, I'm gonna have to ask her that.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I'd be curious to know. I know you mentioned some of these already with just being like something new, full of like a lot of pathos. Do you remember just kind of thinking about that first initial reading? What were some of the things that stood out to you specifically about the story?
So I very clearly remember the bird imagery found throughout the book. It really spoke to me on a fundamental level because Jane, you know, she's very much in search of a physical home, but also she's very much in search of herself. And I think I very much was as well at that age. So that definitely spoke to me during that first reading.
So along with a lot of the imagery that you noticed about Jane, the main character, were there any other characters that stood out to you specifically? Uh-huh. And do you remember them making an impression on you?
For sure. So Jane's voice and temperament resonated with me. But the character that probably spoke to me the most was Helen Burns.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely conflicted by her. I remember that very clearly. She is really fascinating because, you know, in one way, you know, she's like Jane. She's an orphan. She wants home, but she's sort of in it for the long game and like views her ultimate home as heaven, which, you know, is something that we as Christians do for sure. And she also, you know, she dies completely like unafraid and at peace, which I think is something, you know, we all have to do. But I was very kind of torn about her because I very much saw the loss of her life. Because it's like, if you take her out of that setting and put her in a different one, a different home, a different place, there's like this sense that her gifts and talents could have been used in like a really powerful way. So I think I was really drawn to her because she's quite a tragic character, even though she's completely at peace. So it's like, you know, I would bring all sort of my emotional baggage to her. But then at the same time, she is very, you know, she's like, I didn't ask for any of that, you know, she's like, she's completely fine. So she was a character I thought about a lot when I was a teen. I think she sort of highlighted for me the problem of pain or the problem of evil. And her life was kind of one possible response to it, even if I didn't find that response, you know, necessarily fully satisfying.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, with this this read around, had to acquire a used copy because I did not bring the other copies I had with me to where I am now. But the copy I have was clearly...
You have to get the... side note. You have to... Oh my gosh, I just interrupted you.
Do it.
But you have to get the Barnes & Noble copy because it's black. It has like lace around the edges. It has a candelabra.
Oh, there's flames on it?
No, lace. Lace around the edges, but it does have like a candelabra.
Oh, lace. Okay. Not flames. Wow.
Well, there is the candles. So there are flames. And on the book, so you weren't wrong. But that's where it's at. That's where you gotta go.
Honestly, that would actually be really, really cool.
Yeah, you gotta have it for your bookshelf.
It's just funny because clearly a student had this one and they were just learning about how to analyze reading with like your classic who, what, when, where, how, why questions in like happy highlighter.
Oh, how interesting. Oh.
So I come to that chapter where the scarlet fever comes to Lowood, and just like right at the top with a big old asterisk was like, why did Helen have to die? And I was like, you know what, reader, that is an excellent question.
They were on the right track.
They were on the right track indeed. And I think Jane, in some sense, like you mentioned, what we see and feel in reacting to Helen's character is a lot of like what Jane does for us. She is very rightly upset and is like, I cannot believe that you can be this content and peaceful about this, given like what your life has been like and like what's happening to you now.
Exactly.
Yeah. That loss is a big one. And it's pretty early on as well in the story too.
Yeah. I think it really frames, you know, I mean, Jane, when you look at her, I mean, her life too, as well, it's just like loss after loss after loss, which is so sad.
Indeed. Or just kind of how she reacts to each of them, or like is starting to like suspect that loss could also happen, like when she starts new things as well. So going from there, I think, you know, we've got Jane, the character, we've got Helen Burns and like her role in this story. I'd love for you to think about like the next time that you either read the book or listened to the book. Was there something specific or just some things even that kept you coming back to the story after that first read aloud with your sister?
Sure. So, you know, it definitely is a book that I thought about quite a lot. It spoke to me on so many different levels. I was very sensitive to the supernatural as a child, and this book had that. And I think one thing that made the book kind of stay with me is the tone. You know, it's very dark and moody. It never shies away from the existential questions of life. You know, just like dives in there. You know, it looks at how one should live and why. It portrays like love, loss, like despair, sacrifice, anger, confusion. So I always felt like it was a bit of like a really authentic thesis for the human experience. And as a teen, those sorts of things were always on my mind. And so I was kind of like, I buy into this book, you know, it kind of understands, it's really wrestling with everything that humans wrestle with. And so I think that's one reason why the book really stayed with me as I grew up. It was like a book that really met me where I was at and just kind of where I always am.
Oh, that's cool. I love it when books do that. And just even more amazing considering like that they were written like quite some time before us, but the fact that the story still has something to say.
I know, like that sort of like is this like wild connective tissue between times. And like when you look at it, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like,
right.
Like, I mean, maybe it's like when you get away from the older days, you're like, oh, you know, everything was a certain way, or you have these like notions. But then you read stuff like that, and you're like, no, people like felt as deeply and as big and as intensely as we feel now. And it's like, and why wouldn't they? You know, it makes perfect sense. But when you read that, you're really confronted by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If this is somebody like took something that you feel and then put it into words, and there's a serious amount of scope that I noticed, like a really kind of like epic sweep in some way, mm-hmm. that the book is reaching for. Like, I didn't realize how many times Jane is just walking around Rochester's Great Manor House and just like looking out the window. She does a lot of looking out of windows and like telling the reader what she sees. And then suddenly we go from what she sees like into her head to what she's thinking while she's, you know, looking at the heath or the moor or something. And yeah, just the introspection and the way that those parts of like internal thought were articulated really stood out to me this second time.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. It really is.
Okay. So we're going from those memories of kind of revisiting the book after the first initial reading. And as you continued to kind of like grow up from age 13, did the story change in any ways for you? Like, did certain parts stand out at different times? Did you notice things? Did its place in your life start to change at all?
So definitely. And it's funny that you mentioned Jane looking out the window, because so what happened is I began to appreciate more as a writer.
Yeah.
You know, the story is, it's mm-hmm. teeming with emotion, yet it's really undergirded by incredible writing. So like not only is the prose very gripping, mm-hmm. but the intentionality and the craft, it just inspires me. So every character and plot point, it's used in multiple ways to create a very complex story. So I'm just, mm-hmm. I'm always like in awe. So like, for example, you know, Rochester loses his physical sight, yet gains, you know, spiritual sight. You know, Helen's death mm-hmm. is like a contrast to Mrs. Reed's death. The novel, I just feel like whether you look at it microscopically or macroscopically, it's staggering. It really is a work of art, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I love those contrasts. And actually, I had never thought about seeing Helen's death in contrast to Mrs. Reed's. Wow.
Maybe I'm reading into it, but I think it does contrast it.
No, I think you're completely on the right track. Because like Mrs. Reed's death is an intense scene in the book. And like, if we think about when we were talking about Helen Burns's death and how distressed and angry Jane was about the peaceful way in which Helen was content to die and saw her reward as an eternal one and wished Jane like courage at the end with her passing, it's almost like the roles have reversed.
Yeah, exactly.
That Jane is the one who is content and peaceful and at peace meeting her aunt, someone who's caused her like so much pain in her life. And Mrs. Reed is just coldly stubborn in that scene and refuses to meet like Jane's offer of peace. Yeah, I totally see the parallel now, but that was not something I would have initially thought of.
So I like to think it's intentional. I think it was. I think she's a pretty intentional writer. It's like you can literally like pick out like, you know, like, or you could read it like an axe and like see different things in every one, and you could read it in its entirety and see different things. It's almost like a mood ring. It just changes every time light hits it. It's really interesting.
Yeah, like a mood ring. Exactly. Like you could just follow one of the characters and just experience a myriad of different point of views in the story.
Yeah, yeah. You could like follow one all the way through and see it in just a completely different way.
So just for a point in terms of, and in some sense, like an ode to the richness and complexity of the story, how many times would you say you have read the book since that first initial read aloud?
So probably all in like its entirety from like start to finish, probably only about twice. But I do often revisit passages. I'll just, you know, like grab it. Sometimes I'll even just like open it and just kind of whatever I fall on, I can just really immediately get swept away by it. And just kind of like taken in by its undertow. So I read it, you know, a lot in piecemeal, but probably only twice beginning to end. But yeah, it's almost kind of like a friend where you just revisit it for coffee and conversation and then put it back and then come back for another, you know, coffee and conversation later on. It's kind of how I've treated it.
Yeah, I love that idea. This is a side note, but it has nothing to do really with the book, but it more has to do with something. Have you seen, it's this trend on TikTok where they tell you to go to your bookshelf and pick out a random book and turn to page 36 and whatever the first...
To describe your love life?
Yes. Describe your love life or like what your friends think of you.
Yes, I have seen that trend.
Or something like that. And so I just realized like Jane Eyre would be a really interesting one to do with that trend.
What's the page number?
I think it was just like 38. They were like page 38 or 36. I've seen some say 42, but it's just all about turning to a specific page.
I'll have to do that after I hang up. That's what I'm going to do. Page 38. You do it too. Let me know what, let's compare. We'll see what we got.
Page 38 yes. And compare?
Yes. Page 30 and compare.
Okay. Oh, true. Because it'll be like based on versions. I have the Penguin Classic paperback one. So we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, great. I'm writing it down. Page 38.
And I have that black Barnes & Noble one. So I think it'll be different. Yes, I just wrote it down too.
Okay. I'm just curious to know that when you have reread the book end to end or consulted certain parts of it for a coffee and conversation, what things have kind of stood out to you in those moments specifically?
Well, you know, so the parts that spoke to me as a teen, I think they pretty much still really speak to me, like the supernatural elements, the romance, the sort of feeling of longing throughout the story. And I think it's almost interesting that those themes have mm-hmm. kind of been, have sort of stood outside the test of my own timeline of me growing mm-hmm. and that they are still so timeless to me. And that's still what speaks to me. And I think it's because those were sort of outside of any one specific age category. Mm-hmm. For example, if I'd read the story even as a much younger child, I think those aspects would have still spoken to me. And revisiting as an adult, they still do. I definitely, mm-hmm. you know, bring more intellectual currency and interpretation to the table. But I feel like the things I'm drawn to, mm-hmm. honestly, are the same, which, and I feel like most people say, you know, when they read a book later, it's different, but, there really is an aspect of it that is just very, very just timeless to me. And I think it's something that'll, or those themes will just stay with me till the day I die and were with me the moment I was born.
Yeah, actually, what stands out to me about that is I realize it tracks with Jane as a character because, you know, there is that first scene in... you know, in the Red Room in her aunt's house where she's, you know, basically, you know, locked in there after having a fight with her cousin. And I remember.
The room. Yeah. Yeah.
But then there's also like as Jane, you know, takes up the position as governess in Rochester's house, I realize now, yeah, there's like a lot of fairy phantom imagery and language that is used between both Jane and Rochester. There's a lot about like dreaming. Yeah, those things and those descriptors like continue to follow Jane. Yeah, with all of the characters that she interacts with, either like trying to understand like whether what she experienced was like lucid and actually happened or she's got, you know, other people telling her, actually, I'm pretty sure you just dreamed that. It was like a vision.
And it's interesting to kind of consider those questions in light of, you know, the author herself, because I think all the Brontes are very much very supernaturally sensitive. So my sense is that she would say no, like she was really experiencing those things, which adds a whole nother layer to it of intensity and questions of, you know, the spiritual realm and our perceptions of it.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see that making sense. I mean, they grew up in a house across the street from a graveyard. So like as a young person, the place that that holds in like one's imagination and view of the spiritual and of mortality is definitely, yeah, interesting to put that context around it.
Yeah. And, you know, and like their lives were, you know, just so tragic as well. You know, like I believe their brother really had some crazy inner demons that he really struggled with. Yeah, their father, I believe, is really distant. And I believe they all kind of really write about this kind of like awareness of like the sort of like a deeper realm around them, which is terrifyingly visceral for sure. And you really see, I mean, just oozes through, you know, I mean, you look at Wuthering Heights as well, her sister's book, and it just, you know, just really comes through so strongly.
Yes. Yeah, that one takes the tone up to another level and really uses the natural elements of like
it does
the whole even just like the title Wuthering Heights. Mm-hmm. Like you could just kind of start from there,
you know, the word wuthering. Yeah.
Yes. Like is that a sound? Mm-hmm. Is it a verb? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, that just kind of engages all the senses, so it just kind of speaks back to that visceral description language that you mentioned.
Definitely.
Cast the net a little wider, kind of look from the very beginning when you first read it to now, is how would you say that this book has helped you become the person that you are now?
Well, so probably ever since I was about 9, I always knew I wanted to be a writer. And then there were certain books that kind of came along the way that really reinforced that conviction in me. Jane Eyre was definitely one of them. It was written by a woman. It completely just took me away. I was very much like, I want to do that. It's also made me see kind of like the power of fiction, kind of explore kind of like your inner life. As a child, I had a really intense inner life. I was actually scared quite a bit. I was a very fearful child. And so I think the seeing books like Jane Eyre helped me see like, oh, how fiction can help you kind of explore reality, which is so funny because, you know, fiction you think of as made up, but it's actually such a powerful kind of conduit between the two and understanding yourself. So I think this book was definitely kind of a stepping stone on my way to becoming a writer. I would say it definitely helped me achieve my lifelong dream of becoming a novelist. And also in a very literal way, in my YA novel, which is called A Dress for the Wicked, one of the characters is very tonally inspired by Jane Eyre. So there's a way in which there is a very kind of literal figure from this book that's in my book.
Oh. Okay, no wonder I liked her.
Sophie?
Oh, yes. I liked Sophie.
That'd be really funny if you said a different character.
Okay. Oh my. But then it would have been like
writer paranoia.
Yeah, writer paranoia, but then like reader interpretation versus writer intent.
Oh yeah, yeah, yep, there's all that too. I know, so there's that as well. But yeah, Sophie very much is kind of like a gothic Victorian heroine kind of epitomized.
But yeah, the wardrobe, her mannerisms, she's very smart but doesn't flash it like some of the other contestants.
Mm-hmm. yeah, she's very kind of like cunning, very tempestuous herself. You know, she can't stay, she has very like deep waters, but she can't stay still. You know, like she always has to rearrange the furniture in her room, that type of thing.
Oh, so cool. Okay, wait, now I might want to go back and check that out. But again, no wonder I liked her. Ooh, so exciting.
Oh, I'm glad you did. She's my favorite character in the whole book. In fact, I had to work really hard because she's a secondary character, but she's a very powerful character, so she'd really threaten to take over a lot of the narrative.
Okay, so then in that case, this actually works really well for the next question I have. As a writer, what courage does the book give you now as you continue to write and are now a novelist?
Yeah, you know, I think the book really shows a fearless examination of characters and humanity. So I think it really makes me want to be as kind of, I guess, courageous in my writing to not, I feel like before I would try to categorize things or make them easier for the reader because I felt like they couldn't handle the burden of, you know, the truth or the burden of, you know, how dark I wanted to make certain characters. I was afraid it would make, you know, maybe readers like turn away or not like it. But I feel like the more and more I've written, the more I have, or a book like Jane Eyre has inspired me to really want to be honest and authentic in my writing, even if it's not necessarily as easy for readers or as commercial per se.
I guess that's, I learned something there. That's really neat. Thank you. Yeah, for sharing. And yeah, just thinking about that idea just from like a general creative standpoint of thinking like, yeah, like would somebody read this? Is it too like to this or to that? Uh-huh. I just like hear that like on a creative level because I think sometimes I just remember when I first started doing podcasting classes and we were getting used to the idea of kind of like recording and hearing ourselves and just telling each other like, you're just going to start talking into the mic. It's going to be your voice. It's going to sound super weird. But, you know, like this idea that you have, we think it's really neat. You're clearly excited about it. And it's something that we think other people will be excited about as well. And just thinking about that, like on every level of like every kind of idea. And yeah, just wanting to express that in the best way possible.
Yeah. And every presentation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of idea.
Yeah. Oh, that's
through whatever medium.
Super neat. What would you say to future readers of this story, to people who haven't read the book yet?
You know, I'd probably just say you are in for a treat. And I hope you like it. If you like it, I'll like you more.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of like, you know, like when people are like, they have like a dog or something. And they're like, if my dog doesn't like you, then I don't like you. It's kind of like that with this book. I'm like, if you don't like the book, I don't know if I can like you.
Exactly. Like we might not be able to be friends because you don't like this book. Yep. Been there. It's always exciting to me to know how books influence writers. And I actually absolutely love the dynamic that you do write and like still read, but maybe not as prolifically as some people automatically assume of writers. I think that is so cool, actually.
Oh, really? I tell people that sometimes and I feel like their estimation of me goes way down, but I'm like, it's just the truth. And I, you know, maybe it can be encouraging if someone, you know, isn't a natural reader, has trouble reading, you know, you could still very much be a professional writer. You still definitely can, for sure. You do have to read, but you can read in some, you know, you can read in whatever capacity, audio books or whatever, or very slowly. Yeah. Very slowly, how intermittently as you need to. But you could, yeah, you could definitely still be a writer for sure. I am proof.
I think the reason that I think it's so cool is because I do host and produce a podcast as like a creative hobby. And then people will sometimes ask me for podcast recommendations. And I consistently say like the same two shows because I actually don't listen to very many podcasts myself.
Oh, see, so similar. Yeah.
And sometimes I think to myself, I'm like, should I be like listening to something new all the time to just kind of hear what's out there? And there's so much out there. And there's also like so many books out there. So yeah, there are different capacities and ways to do it.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. 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 And different approaches, you know, definitely. But you could still pursue your dream for sure.
Pursue those dreams. Love it. So, Autumn, if you could dedicate this conversation to someone, who would you dedicate it to and why?
Oh, well, obviously, I have to dedicate it to my sister who read it to me, Leilani. And not only because she read me the book and introduced it to me, but because she, you know, she has been such an advocate in my writing career. She's been there for all of the no's as well as all the yeses. And in writing, there are like 10 billion more, there's like 10 billion no's to every yes. She's been there for every single one. And you know, she, you probably know this, but she also writes. And so we actually say that she's Charlotte Bronte and I'm Emily. And in the dedication of my YA novel, I actually say that she's the Charlotte to my Emily. So it's, it's true. And I think it's very fitting that, of course, I have to dedicate this conversation to her.
That's really sweet. I don't know if I initially picked up that the Charlotte and the Emily was from that. I'm smiling very wide right now. That's beautiful.
Yeah, she's the Charlotte to my Emily. Yeah.
Autumn, thank you so much for sharing Jane Eyre with us. I really appreciate your time and this conversation. So thank you very much for your words today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I had the best time.
That's all for this episode. If you're interested in more stories by Charlotte Bronte and her sisters, check out their works at your local library or bookstore. You can find Autumn's book, A Dress for the Wicked, anywhere that books are sold. I had a chance to read A Dress for the Wicked myself last winter and really enjoyed everything I learned about fashion and cloth and materials and how clothes are made, and really enjoyed the dynamics between all the separate characters. If you are looking for something to gift this holiday, highly recommend A Dress for the Wicked be on your list. You can also follow Autumn on Instagram at AutumnSarahStory. Again, that's Instagram at AutumnSarahStory. Autumn's Instagram is so elegant. It's full of some of the best book polls. It's dark, moody, has excellent soundtracks in the reels. Highly recommend it. You can follow any updates about her works in progress and just the life of a writer. I'll have her Instagram also in the show notes. This podcast was produced and created by me, Catherine Kwong. The theme song that you hear is A Lovely Ghost by the artist Lawn Games. The logo is the work of two artists, Anthony Guerra at The Fool's Art and Alyssa Becciu at Slightly Translucent. Our next episode, honestly, folks, will be coming out in the weeks in which I am able to produce it. But I can let you know it's about one of my absolute favorite Roald Dahl books, Matilda, so you are in for a treat when that episode drops. Follow us at This Book, That Book podcast for updates, and you can subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts. Take care and keep reading.